tu sahana bhunaktu sahaviryangaravahai tejasvinavadhi tamastuma vidvishavahai om shanti 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 om jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhara shiva sari gaura bhakta vrinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama hare rama 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 hare hare
So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to verse 2, even for a jnani, performing action is not at all a fault. Rather, by performance of nishkama karma, the heart becomes fixed in purity. From that jnana, it becomes fixed. Sometimes there may arise disturbance in the heart of the sannyasi. In order to alleviate that disturbance, is it forbidden to engage in karma? Disturbance in the heart certainly obstructs the practice of jnana, but again, taking up enjoyment of sense objects rather than performing nishkam karma is a real degradation. Right? So in other words, you have someone who is engaged in the path of jnana yoga, then for them to be involved in nishkam karma yoga, then that's not a problem, because the principle is the same, that of detachment. So this detachment then, but it's here is being done with knowledge, so therefore the naishkarmya element. So the activity with proper knowledge, right, with that detachment, it's not an impediment on the path of jnana, right, because one is purified by that process. Right? But if one doesn't use that process, then if one just engages in karma, with attachment, then that will be a degradation. That will be a problem. Right? Does that make sense? So naishkarmya, that's the important element. Does that make sense? That's what connects the two. Karma that's not naishkarmya can be a problem, because whatever is the attachment, it will be binding. It's only that activity performed with knowledge and detachment that you become freed from material entanglement. Right? So, yeah. Does that make sense? So otherwise what we're doing is going from this detachment to sense enjoyment. So that's useless. So you want to apply detachment in the engagement of the senses, because then it connects both of them, and then you can become free. Does that make sense? On the other hand, a karma yogi, devotee, is happily engaged in all sorts of activities in the spirit of detachment. His position is better because detached activities are both natural and beneficial. They strengthen one's realizations and propel one towards the ultimate goal. Right? Natural and beneficial, because we may look at it, no, but why would detached activities be natural? Because that's actually the nature of the soul. So to work for someone else's benefit is actually one's nature. Because if you think about relationship, how does relationship work? You have to work for the other person's benefit. Right? Then it works. So that's the natural position of the soul. The soul can't just be on its own. The soul has to be in connection with others, interacting with others. That's its nature. Right? So it's natural, and it's beneficial because of the knowledge and the detachment, one is getting benefit from the activity, and at the same time one is becoming relieved from attachment to that activity. right? And others are getting the benefit because it's nice karma. That means it's for someone else, right? Does that make sense? In verse 3, the Lord explains that detached work is equal to, but easier than renunciation of work. Sannyas is a state of consciousness rather than just an external situation. Bhagavad Gita 6.1. This state is easily attained by devotional service, karma yoga. Right, so we were discussing before, sannyas means that you're performing the activity already for someone else. It's the benefit's not for yourself. Right? So that's the element of sannyas. So when it's being done for the Lord, not that I'll do the work, I'll get the results, my result, and I'll give it to the Lord. I'm already doing the Lord's work. Right? So that's sannyas. So it's coming through the medium of engagement, of activity. So that's more beneficial. It's more easy. And you get the same result. Right? Doing nothing and having the knowledge, you know, and so you're in a detached state, or performing the activity in a detached state of mind, you get the same benefit. In fact, it's actually easier, right? And in the long run, you'll find it will be better. Because the other one, unless one is very, very qualified, how one will do that. And that qualification will be dependent upon previously you have done that, right? Because knowledge and detachment come from appropriate work, right? So that means the person already has done that. That's how he's in that position, right? So if one performs like that, one, it will bring one to that position. Does that make sense? So even if one's already at that position by performing that, it'll bring you farther in that position, right? In verses 4 to 6, it is stated that since the aim of the analytical study of the material world is to find the soul of existence, the Lord, devotional service to the Lord is not different from the analytical study. Srila Prabhupada compares the first process to discover the root of the tree, and the second process to water this root, because the aim of both is Krishna. Only the ignorant sees them as different. Since the ultimate goal is self-realization, one who can see this unifying aim sees things as they are. Right? So you're taking that, you're analyzing things. So by analyzing, what are you supposed to do? Why analyze? What are you trying to accomplish? Right? You know? Make sense? What do you want to accomplish by analyzing?
What's real and what's illusion?
Yes, what's real and what's illusion. So what's real? What's connected to Krishna? What's illusion?
What's
not connected to Krishna? Right. So now, then, so that's the process of jnana. Now, naishkarmya, what's that process? Yes. So having found Krishna, now you're doing something for him. Right. So you can see is they're non-different, but at the same time, is the naishkarmya is actually better. Because you're doing something active for Krishna. So that's because it's devotional service. Right? You understand? Because I am...
Where is that that we came across? Well, I think it's in Bhagavatam.
Where it's describing that when you're going through the levels of naishkarmya. Was that in the Shapanishad?
Sikshamrita.
Yeah, because I remember last year we were discussing that. That you have that karma is higher than jnana, right? But so in that, then you have the element, but the naishkarmya, then you have different levels of this naishkarmya, right? And so they're bringing out is that you're going to have the level where you're performing the activities and you're focusing on not being attached to the results, right? And so you're not necessarily very engaged in things because you're very careful what activities you do to so that you can maintain the spirit of detachment, right? But then there comes a stage where that's not the focus anymore. The focus is simply on pleasing Krishna. Understand? So the activity becomes prominent, but that's because the devotional services become prominent, right? In other words, the naishkarmya, the element of Naishkarmi, we're talking about a spiritual process, right? But this Nishkam Karma Yoga, if it's connected to Krishna for his pleasure, then we're talking devotional service, right? So this also, we were discussing a few days back, this also answers that point about, So you have this in the reflection, right? What's the highest in the spiritual world is going to be the lowest in the material world, right? So that element of dynamically serving the Lord, right, in the spiritual world is higher than the shantaras, where you simply appreciate, but you're not actually rendering specifically any service. Does that make sense? Right? Now, if you reflect that in the material world, then what is service here? Right? What will be the karma? It'll be the lowest, but what does it mean? What are you doing in this state of activity? The spiritual world activity means serving Krishna, pleasing Krishna. Right? And then Shanta Ras means not so involved, but appreciating the position of the Lord, but not doing anything. So when we reverse that here, what is that activity here?
Doing something for yourself?
Yes, doing something for yourself, for your own pleasure, you know, or maybe for some others, like this and that. And then what will be that position, like the Shantaras, where you just appreciate it? Right? You're not involved.
Brahman realization?
Yes, Brahman realization. So why is that better? It's closer to Krishna, right? But at the same time, it's the closest to the point of reflection. So when you cross that reflection, then it's still going to be similar. Then it goes the other side. You understand? So in other words, materialistic activities are a problem. So spirituality is better than that. But ultimately better than that is devotional activities. Right? So that's why if someone can just switch from material activity to spiritual activity, that's the best. It's direct. But if that doesn't work because of attachment, then you use this technique of analyzation to break down our inspiration to be involved in it as a form of karma, you know, so that we pull ourselves back. But as we pull back and we're situated, then we can see things in a balanced light. Then we can be involved in the activity, but now for Krishna. Understand? Yes.
So Naishkarmiya is not dependent on Jnan.
Naishkarmiya means you have to have some knowledge, of course.
Yeah.
But the point is the difference is you could say in this situation, the difference is Jnana Yoga means there's no activity, while Karma Yoga there is. But the knowledge is the same. You know what I'm saying? But it may be that the focus is not as much on the knowledge, right? Because you're performing the activity. So depending upon one's attachment, then one's more focusing on the activity or more focusing on the knowledge, right? So what we're saying here is that your best situation is going to be where one is qualified in the process of Jnana Yoga, but one's performing Karma Yoga. Right? That will give you best result, because then you have the most knowledge and detachment in which you're performing the activity. That will be more dynamic. Right? In other words, karma yoga where you're just involved in it, it would be better that you're more detached. But if you can be detached and involved in it, that will be the quickest. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, activity is always the recommended process. It's always the best. Right? That's why we see is when Krishna is giving the options of how to situate yourself, then best is you just take up devotional service. Right? and that's all. Be satisfied with that. If one can't do that, then one takes up the process of regulated, you know, devotional activities. Right? In other words, if the Bhagavat doesn't come, you know, instantaneously, you know, like for the gopis or Maharaj Katvanga like this, or the wives of the yagyik Brahmins like that, then if that process doesn't work, then you take up the pancharatrik process. You regulate your lifestyle and everything in connection with the Lord. Right? And that's complete. If that's not, you're not well situated in that completely, there's still other things going on, then you situate yourself in Naishkarmya. Right? That you perform, do all the activities you want to be involved in, but they should all be done for the Lord. Right? So in other words, it's sannyas. Then you drop into the varnashram system. Right? If that doesn't work, right, then you perform Sakam Karma Yoga, right? But it's still connected to the Lord, but you're doing it for your own purpose, and then you're going to give something of that to Krishna. Right? If that doesn't work, then just be a nice guy who, you know, opens hospitals, gives in charity, and does all those good things. Right? And if you can't do that, that still doesn't work for you, then you can be a Mayavadi. Right? So we see an actual practical Mayavadi is the bottom of the pile. Right? Because better than that is work. No, it's because work you're getting a result. The other one is like, you're not involved in the material, so that's good. But where are you going? What are you doing? Nothing. There's not going to be any lasting benefit, because results always come from an endeavor. So how long can you not endeavor? So you're endeavoring to not endeavor, but how long, after a while, you get good at not endeavoring. So then there won't be an endeavor to not endeavor. So then nothing's happening, so there's no result. So then what happens? Then you'll think of the material activities and come back to the material platform. Understand? Does that make sense? So there is a little endeavor to not endeavor. Right? But as soon as that practice is very accomplished, where's the endeavor? So that means there will be no result. Right? And if there's no result, then that means you can't be in a static position. You're either moving forward or moving backwards. So what will happen? They'll move back. That's what Prabhupada says. All these big yogis and jnanis and that, after some time, then they all take up philanthropic activities. Why? Because their focus on that sadhana that they have and that knowledge and all that when they're younger, then we see that's fully absorbing. But after they become good at that, now it's going to absorb their mind. So they always turn to philanthropic activities. Right? Does that make sense? So they're always going to include that. So our point is this, since that's always going to be included, why not include it from the beginning, but in connection with Krishna? Then it's spiritual. Does that make sense? Right? Yes.
I noticed many times that through the time, devotees start lessening their activity as they, you know, instead of engaging more and working in this mood of devotion, sort of stronger, they lessen that. Would that be a reflect of that element?
Yes, because see, you take up devotional process, so it's new, right? And so it's a new culture, a new process, new activities, you know, new vocabulary, lifestyle, everything's new. So one's focusing very much on that just to be able to perform it. But after some years, one, you know, becomes comfortable in performing those activities. So now, unless you go to the next level where you are trying to refine what you have, you just take it at what you have, that's good enough. You know, in principle, yes. But the point is, since the mind, intelligence, body are still acting, then that should keep up with it. So that one should be refining that. So if one doesn't go to find the small details, then what will keep your mind busy? Therefore, then they'll just get into other activities and they'll say these are important because now that's new, right? You're going out and get a job or starting a new business or, you know, taking up some particular political, you know, forum and all that, then that is, what do you call it? That's new. Right? So that keeps you busy. Does that make sense? Like that. So, one has to be careful is that you're going to be busy, so you might as well be busy with Krishna consciousness, because then you get a Krishna conscious result. Because the other is then, it's like what Vishwanath is talking about here, is that it's not Naishkarmya. So they've gone from the platform of being absorbed in devotional activities to not doing devotional activities. So it means they want to be involved in a broader range of activities. Okay, it's understood. Okay, before it was just getting your rounds chanted and getting up in the morning, and these things were difficult, so they were very absorbing. Now that's easy. So of course, you need something more to do. But that something more to do can be done in connection with Krishna. Right? So in other words, find something, some projects or study or like that, because that's the natural thing. If the karma comes easy, then you get more into study. Right? Because karma yoga generates knowledge and detachment. So then that's the next natural step. But what they're saying is when the jnana yogi shouldn't give up the process of naishkarmya. You know what I'm saying? But now it's that he has that knowledge he'll study, and then he will apply that in the situations that you know, as whatever he's involved in. Does that make sense? You know, so then it works. It works very good. But what happens is that they don't, so they, to keep themselves from becoming bored, then they take up something else. You know? And that's why you have all these different isms and different things. It's just to keep them busy. It's not necessary. It's not required. Chanting Hare Krishna is enough. You know, and things in connection with chanting. You know, the preaching and these activities, the pancharatric activities and all that is enough. But because it doesn't get into the fine detail, at least in their mind it doesn't. Then they'll drop down into the lower, the Vedic, you know, which will be include all the worldly activities. But unfortunately, if they follow the Vedic, nice, it's more pious, but then they'll get distracted by that, you know, their astrology or their Sanskrit or their Ayurveda or something like this and that. Or it may be the same things, but not in connection with the Vedic. You know, and that distracts, you know, this new psychology or something, you know, something like that, or have to care for everybody, right? You know, Vaishnava's supposed to care for an ant, so it's already there in the philosophy, but now because it's come from, you know, somewhere else, then now it's so important. You know what I'm saying? So it's something new for their mind, but they're not connecting it to Krishna. You know, or if they are, then it's very minimally connected, so they're basically dropping to the platform of, Nishkam Karma Yoga to Sakam Karma Yoga. So that's why you find that it's uncomfortable dealing with the devotee in these areas. Because it's not a very advanced position. So when they sit down and chant or lead kirtan or do other things, it's good. So that can be the confusion. But it's just what absorbs their mind is something on a lower level. You know. Is that okay? That's something back there. Okay. Yeah, so in other words, when one can combine these both, be able to analyze and find the root of the tree, and then to serve that root, that combination, that's actually seeing things as they are, because analyzing is only part of the soul. Right? Because analyze, you'll understand your position, and you'll, you know, with knowledge, have understood what's there. Right? So, one has understood, you know, some aspect of Sambandha, you know, who you are, who God is, and all that. And there'll be half of you know, in other words, the knowledge and all that that's there in Abhideya, you know, that comes from the Samvit potency. But what's missing? Right? What are we missing?
Prayojana.
And what is that prayojana? Just analyzing everything and being detached from everything?
Everything
Yes, so everything's offered to Krishna. Okay, and to offer to Krishna means you have to do what? An activity, right? So that would mean then that completes the picture. Right? You know who you are, who God is, and you know that, so that knowledge and all that, that's half of what's necessary to perform an activity. Right? And just analyzing is not the ultimate goal. You know, it's a goal, but it's not the ultimate goal. But the ultimate goal is pleasing Krishna. So when you add that, means ultimate goal of pleasing Krishna, and the willingness to perform an activity to do that, to the knowledge that's necessary to do the activity, and the knowledge of who you are, and what how Krishna is in everything, that's complete. Right? So that's why it says here, this unifying aim sees things as they are, because that's the actual principle. Right? Does that make sense? So it naturally goes from, I am Brahman, Krishna is Brahman, and so therefore, I can, you know, by seeing it in that way, I won't be entangled to, I am Krishna's servant, Krishna's the master. Right? It's the same principle, it's just a higher level of this Brahman understanding. You know, or you could say the Brahman is a lower level of the, transcendental understanding. So it naturally, it means what you'll notice here is why the devotional process seemingly is elusive, is because it has natural stages, but at the same time as the movement between these stages is dependent upon one's consciousness, one's understanding. And so, it's very fluid, right? The same activity, the same field, you can get all these variety of results, right? That's the difference. It's seamless. You know, we're the nice little boxes and everything. Like you have the devotional process has been there for years, but do devotees discuss it? Like how long has nectar devotion been around?
500 years.
Yeah, that. But I'm saying within our movement.
Since Prabhupada started.
40 years.
Yeah, so it was, probably was at, I think he went in the late 60s. You know, they say nectar devotion is there, so it's there. Now, what's in nectar devotion?
Full recipe.
Yeah, the full recipe. Now, in there, you're having a starting off on just being convinced devotional service in the first 5 chapters of devotional service is the best activity, is the best process. Right? Then you start, the Vaidhi Sadhana. Right? And then from there you're saying that, association with the spiritual master, and this is the most important element. Right? And then hearing and chanting. So it gives these five aspects that are most important. Then that will take on up to, then there's going to be spontaneous devotional service, then devotional service in ecstasy, then devotional service in love of Godhead. Right? So that's the first section. Right? That establishes devotional service. Then after that, 3 chapters are details on what is rasa, what is bhava, it means, in other words, what are the different aspects that make rasa. Okay? So now in there it's Vaidhi Bhakti is all the rules and regulations, the 64 items of devotional service. Spontaneous devotional service simply means doing that with you like doing that with spontaneity. Right? It doesn't change. So this is a problem, right? Because it's the same thing, but does that make sense? And then, ecstasy, love of Godhead, they're a little distant, like that. So it becomes a little hazy, right? Okay. Now, when devotees started, from reading here and branched into reading from, I think, Vishwanath, then he has a book called Madhurya Kadambini. Okay, now what does it do?
Shows the levels from Shraddha to Prema?
Yes, shows the level. It takes one verse from Nectar of Devotion. Adau Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, like this. It takes that verse and then expands on it. So now what do we have?
A detailed
things where we will see it as these little boxes that you move from one to the next to the next to the next. Right? And so now in courses, how many, if we think of, you know, devotional courses, then the devotional course we've heard of in the past, Shraddha to Prema, that was very popular for, you know, like 10 years. Right? But just courses in nectar devotion, you don't really hear much of them. Right? I think Giriraj Maharaj is one of the only ones that ran one in Vrindavan. Everyone else would do these other ones. Okay? Does this make sense what I'm saying? But the problem, what is not, Shraddha to Prema, so that you're on the level of Shraddha, then you move to the level of Sadhu Sangha, then you move to the level of Bhajana Kriya, then to Anartha Nibriti, then to Nishta. But what actually is going on?
You have mixed level, you have different processes in the same moment.
Yes, you have that, because you may be more, you may be fixed in one, like in your chanting, but let's say, you know, in some other aspect, you're not very fixed. You know, so you're going to have all these at once. Then the other thing is, how do you move from Shraddha to Sadhu Sangha? Yes, so in other words, when the faith is greater, then you move from Shraddha to Sadhu Sangha. Right? Now when faith is more again, right, then you, and your quality of association with the Vaishnavas is greater, then you move to Bhajana Kriya. Right? So when faith, and that increases again, and your practice increases again, then you move to the, you understand? So in other words, each one's going through. So Prabhupada defines prema, one of his definitions is prema is mature Shraddha. But that doesn't come out because we like these little boxes moving from one to the next. So that's the difficulty, is that it's seamless, the process. Why? You know, it means, in other words, is there, let us say you look in a mirror and you think what you see in the mirror is you and that's it. You know? And then you come back the next day and then there's something on the mirror. Oh, now there's a big problem here, you know? Like that, you know, you have some strange disease, you know, you have toothpaste on your cheek disease, right? It's there on the mirror, you know? And so, now, if we were somehow or another, by explanation and other things, we're able to make you understand that you're not the mirror, the reflection in the mirror, that we are the body. Then, you understand? Then is there a difference in what you see in the mirror and what the body is? Right? In the mirror you see noses and ears and all this and that. Does the body have that? You understand? So there's no need of changing your concept. But the point is what you actually, what is the real ear that you have to change. Does that make sense? Right? So in other words, activity is there. Relationships are there. Emotions are there. Results are there. So that itself is real. But what you think is the emotion, the relation, the activity, that's what's the illusion. You understand? So, because of lack of discrimination, we see activity, activity, so therefore they're the same. You can't tell the difference between the two. Right? So one discriminates through the use of the spiritual concept, the philosophy. So, therefore, the tattva, you pull it back and just analyze it. And from that, you remove the attachment to the illusory concept until one starts becoming attracted to the actual real concept, the spiritual concept. Right? Does that make sense? So transcendence is used as that bridge between the two. Right? Because in Vrindavan, are they sitting around and thinking, you know, oh, so spiritual here? No, they're just thinking of Krishna and that. You know, when they see, like you see explanation in Dwarka, when one of the sons of Krishna is sitting on his lap, like that, the other sons think, oh, what pious activities he's performed. Right? You know, so they're not thinking, you know, does that make sense? So they're just seeing it directly in relationship to Krishna. We see the process. So that's why there's no need of it being something different. We have this idea that spiritual must be different. No, it's a matter of the difference is only because we can't tell the difference. So we make a difference. But once we can tell the difference, then there's no need to follow a separate process. Does that make sense? That's why Yudhishthir Maharaj and Ambarish Maharaj don't have to give up being emperors of the world, being family men, dealing with their money and their, you know, armies and, you know, their administration, because they don't see it separately from Krishna. They understand all these things are just activities that Krishna performs. These are all activities connected to him. So they don't have to, but we see as if that's not the case, either for they give example, or because Krishna likes it done that way, then we make a difference. So Parikshit Maharaj, you know, drops everything and goes and sits on the bank of the Ganga and, you know, doesn't eat or sleep or drink anything for 7 days. Right? So then we'll say, wow, that's spiritual. You know? But before that, he was also spiritual. You understand? But one is pastime, so this is just how Krishna likes it to run. You know, because he also tastes these different aspects. But the other thing is that these things make it, they make us discriminate. Right? And go, this means you can't say that there's anything mixed here. Why? Because generally when we say something extreme, we're looking at those things, actually we don't know how to define it, but we're looking at direct devotional activities. But in the process, we throw in all these different things of austerity and, you know, other things like that that aren't actually direct. But they're detached indirect rather than attached indirect. You understand? So because detachment is higher, then we'll consider it better. But we still can't discriminate between detached activity and devotional activity. Does that make sense? Like that. So these are the whole idea is that one's analyzing this, the jnana yoga is to analyze this so one can tell the difference. So the quality of one's devotional service, right, the buddhi yoga, is better. Does this make sense? Yeah? No? Kind of? What's not happening? Didn't get the last one. Yes. We're the only one that can tell. Well, Krishna can also tell. But people who are more advanced than you can also tell. Right? No, but that's why the spiritual masters are in the association of devotees. Because in that means you associate with those who are more advanced, then you'll do what they do. So you automatically will be doing the right thing and progressing. Right? You see their consciousness, how they view things, and so you take that up. You know what I'm saying? It's a gradual process, but the point is as long as it's progressing, then we're not worried. Even if it's going slow, if it's progressive, then it's fine, it's good. It's not so much same level, it's same mentality. It's not same level. It's same mentality. Does that make sense? What's the point of friends? Why would you call somebody a friend? Share what? Same activity. So that's the point, is that let's say someone likes to do Harinam. So you associate with those who like doing Harinam. So now in that you may have very new people and some very advanced people. But the friendship is based on that activity of Harinam. You understand? So there has to be a common activity. That's what generates the friendship. Otherwise there's no common activity then. So that's when you say equal, that's what it means, is equal activity. No. I mean, that will naturally come within there. It's just like, you have friends, means a friendship, you have four kinds. Those who are junior, those who are equal, those who are senior, and those who are intimate. Right? You know, so you're going to have that four anyway within the realm of friendship.
But it doesn't mean that we have to associate
with those who are equal all the time. No, Rupa Goswami says better you associate with those who are more advanced, but like-minded. Right? You understand? So the like-mindedness, that's what generates the friendship. But those who are more advanced, then that means then you'll be inspired and move forward. Right? So in other words, you associate with those who you're inspired in Krishna conscious to be in their association. You know what I'm saying? Because in any case, every living entity is unique, so everyone's going to be advancing in their own way in different areas. You know what I'm saying? So maybe you do one aspect better, but they do another aspect better. Does that make sense? So there's an inspiration, but there's a common ground. You know, you like to cook, they like to cook, but they'll say they cook the sweets better than you, but you can cook salties. So there's something they do that inspires you and something that you do that inspires them. But you're both cooks and you're both good cooks. Does that make sense? Like that.
Maharaj, in your previous point about devotional and detached, the example of fasting.
Fasting.
For example, if I fast because I think that will be pleasure for Krishna,
yes.
That will be devotional. Or if I do it because I'm not this body, so I will fast.
Yeah. That'll be more from detachment. But because it's in connection with Krishna, it's still beneficial. You know what I'm saying? So, because just as we can connect the attachments, we can connect the detachments. You know, this is the mistake, is we say, oh, that just detached, that's not real, but then they'll connect attachments, or say they connect attachments. But the point is, attachment and detachment are the same thing. You know what I'm saying? The principle is the same, it's just a matter of whether one is, you know, attracted to it or not retracted to it. You know? That's fine. How the mind works. Like I said, attracted to it, you know, that makes sense. And it should have been not attracted to it, but I said not retracted to it, because retract is you pulling back, so attraction and retraction. So it's like. Okay? So, in other words, it's connected to Krishna, so therefore it's beneficial. So we shouldn't, in other words, if someone is, let's say you have some devotee and he's very enthusiastic about fasting and this and that, then you shouldn't say, well, that's not important and this and that, and it's all the devotion, because you have to connect something. So if that's what inspires them, as long as it doesn't affect their service and doesn't affect their relationships with others, you know, they don't become always angry and grumpy and, you know, critical of others who do eat and, you know, stuff like that, then it's fine. You know, then it's good. So even if it's not, you know, there's more at the element of just it's a good thing to do, it's a proper thing, but, you know, there's a codicil or it's a festival day. So they're doing these things. It's connected to Krishna. But it may not be as direct as just doing it to please Krishna. Right? But if it's getting in the way of their service, they're not eating and then they can't do any service and they get this and that, then better they, you know, pull it back to where they can still function. Right, because what you were saying before is the detachment is good as long as up to the point of how one is interacting and serving Krishna. Right, so one has to find that balance. Does that make sense? So some will go one way extreme, some will go the other way. Well, fasting, why we have to be fanatic and that? No, it's a matter of what works for the individual. So if you understand the process, somebody will be, you know, doing more, somebody will be doing less. It doesn't matter. As long as you're trying to obtain a particular level of consciousness. Does that make sense? So that's why it can accommodate everything. But if there's a situation where you have a group of persons who have basically the same inspiration or lack of it, or same distraction, then you create a category. You know? Does that make sense? Because if you just tell them like this very seamless method, then they can't understand it. You just say, you know, you shouldn't fast like this. You know what I'm saying? And then they know, okay, and it works for them or their friends who are like them. But then the problem comes is then if that gets taken by others who could fast, you know, and don't want to, and then they say, see, here it says this. Then that's where it becomes a problem. So that's why one has to understand the principle on which it's based. Otherwise, then there'll be a problem. Is that what I'm saying? Yes.
I didn't understand what you said about they can't understand the seamless aspect of.
Seamless aspect means the activity is staying the same, the consciousness is developing. So one's detached from the material and seeing it in that way and seeing it, you know, connected to Krishna. But the activity stays the same. But we're used to that, you know, different mentality, completely different activity. So only if one can't understand it in this way, you may change the activity. You understand? Like the brahmachari, they go to the forest. Because, you know, if they're in an environment where the senses are being engaged, then all that comes to their mind is material. So you remove them from that environment. And then they get accustomed to dealing with the senses on a higher platform. Then in that higher platform, then they could come back to the city and be involved in preaching and that in the city and not get distracted because they can tell the difference between material and spiritual engagement in the senses. Does that make sense? So, but it's not considered a final step, right? Otherwise, then the Bhajanananda would be considered the highest, no? Because he's pulled himself back the most. But no, the Goshtinandi is the highest. Right? So pulling oneself out of an area is just temporarily until he can deal with it. Does that make sense? And one's been in the family, so the brahmachari pulls one back from that. Or one's been, you know, then one's matured, he's been in the family as a householder now. I mean, it's his house rather than he's in his father's house. So vanaprastha is where you pull back from that. You understand?
Again, so
yeah. Yeah, so, or you're in the house, you know, as a kid, and you do whatever you like, and there's no real higher consideration. Then you become a brahmachari, so you pull back from that. And so now you can discriminate that engaging your senses, but there are higher principles. You know, there's responsibilities, there's duties, there's other people involved. Then one can go in and be a householder, you know, properly, because now it's not all about you. It's about, you know, the family itself as a unit. But as before you were a brahmachari, then that's not a question. It's all about you. You're the son of the household, of course. You know, so is there a question? You know, it's like that. So now it becomes back. Then you can actually run a household. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that principle of one temporarily removing oneself from the environment and analyzing the situation is there until one can make the discrimination and one practical in that you can use it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that okay? In verse 6, the Lord explains that renunciation without devotional service, karma yoga, cannot make one happy. Right? Because so here, taking now, devotional service and karma yoga are synonymous. Right? Because that's, you know, what we define. That's what it means. Because karma, yoga, is connected to Krishna. So activity is connected to Krishna through naishkarmya. So that renunciation, then, is naishkarma karma yoga. Renunciation without devotional service, karma yoga, cannot make one happy. If it is accepted without proper qualification, sannyas will give rise to suffering because of unfulfilled desires. The material desires can be purified only when they are connected with the Lord. Simply ignoring them will not solve the problem. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport to verse 6. The students of the Bhagavat school are engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. According to Tupanchatriki regulations. And therefore the Vaishnava sannyasis have multiple engagements in the transcendental service of the Lord. Right? So here's defining it. Bhagavat school, but they're engaged in devotional service according to Pancharatra. Right? So that's important to note that. In other words, oh, we're Bhagavat, we don't care for all these. No. But we are Bhagavat school, but we engage according to Pancharatra. Right? The Vaishnava sannyasis have nothing to do with material activities, in that they perform various activities in their devotional service to the Lord. But the Mayavadi sannyasis engaged in the studies of Shankya and Vedanta and speculation cannot relish the transcendental service of the Lord. Because the studies become very tedious, they sometimes become tired of Brahman's speculation unless they take shelter of the Bhagavatam without proper understanding. Therefore, the conclusion is that those who are engaged in Krishna consciousness are better situated than the sannyasis engaged in simple speculation about what is Brahman and what is not Brahman, although they too come to Krishna consciousness after many births. Right, so our point is why waste time? You take it up now. So, because the Pancharatrik, then there's so many other activities. Right? Because for the morning, getting up, taking the bath, the Vaishnav dress, the deity worship, there's the preaching activities, taking care of guests, you know, taking prasad, all these different things are there. So someone in the Bhagavat school following the Pancharatra then has a lot more engagement. Right? Because the Mayavadis, all they actually have is studying Vedanta. That's all they have. They're not supposed to do anything else. So that's all they have. So if any desires aren't taken care of, very difficult. Very difficult. Right? But here, the Pancharatra engages, because it's Ekayana. So, we have to remember, is Ekayana means it being, the Pancharatra being an Agama, means Agama means that which comes from. So, having come from the Veda, all the verses of the Pancharatra and all the principles are from the Vedas. But what they've chosen is all those verses that deal with worship of Vishnu. Right? Well, in the Vedas, there'll be verses that apparently aren't about Vishnu. They're about Indra or Agni or Varuna. Right? But so all those that are directly dealing with Vishnu, that becomes all those removed and compiled in one place. That's called Pancharatra. Understand? So that means, in the same principle, if you take any activities described in the Veda and you connect it to the Supreme Lord, then it's Ekayana, it's Pancharatra. That's why we don't have to separately mention the Vedic here. So he says, students of the Bhagavat school, okay, are engaged in devotional service of the Lord according to Pancharatriki regulations, right? So that's Pancharatra. So therefore, the Vaishnava sannyasis, that's the Vedic. Right? So all three are represented here. So that means that all the Vedic activities, that broad range that the sannyasis can't be involved in, are according to Pancharatrik rules. Are connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes? No? The fun part is Prabhupada considered this kind of like, what do you say? This is kind of like high school level knowledge. Verses 7 to 13. Description of Naishkarmya. Alright, so that was all. Naishkarmya is equal to, but easier and safer than renunciation of work. Right? So we're establishing that of these two, they're equal. Right? Because you've heard about karma in the third chapter, you've heard about jnana in the fourth chapter. Now we're saying that they're equal, but the karma is easier. Right? But what we're doing is that combination is Naishkarmya. So, Naishkarmya comes from knowledge. Why would he be detached unless there's knowledge? Right? Otherwise, it's just repulsion. Right? And that's basically not so useful. You know, how long can you be repulsed from something? Yes?
Kama Yoga and Jnana Yoga, are they equal in that they are interdependent?
Are they equal because they're interdependent? I mean, they have some connection. But the point is they can be worked together if you know how to do that, this process of Naishkarmya. If you don't know, then they're basically, in one sense, independent of each other, because those who would be involved would have a different mentality and different purpose. Right? But for the devotee, then they only have one purpose. One is analyzing who the Lord is and then serving Him. Right? So they're two aspects of the same thing. So in that way, they're equal, right? But the serving is easier. So even if you can't analyze, you can serve, right? So if your analyzation was, your service was depending upon analyzation, then when could someone take up, start devotional service? right? Only after studying for many years, but how will they actually get that knowledge without performing the activity? So therefore, karma gives rise to jnana. Right? So now we're saying karma gives rise to jnana, and that jnana is reinvested back into the karma, rather than thinking, well, that's it, now you move on further. No, it's reinvested back. Does that make sense?
Yeah. My doubt is that they said that they're equal. I can't understand. Is it that jnana yoga can be performed without karma yoga?
Can jnana yoga be performed without karma yoga? Yes, if you're qualified.
So you would, that involves doing no activity? Or what does it mean?
No activity means there's no activity that specifically gets results. You know, you get up in the morning and take your bath and stuff like that. You know, you chant your japa, you do these things. You know what I'm saying? But the point is that one has to be very qualified to do that. In other words, there can be no material needs to be on that platform. You understand? So that's why, even though they give the same result, technically, it's easier karma because there's always going to be material needs. So karma can engage them. So when that karma is performed with knowledge, that position is naishkarmya. So that's the best situation. That's the most dynamic.
So when with knowledge you're acting only based on your spiritual desires without any material desires, that's not considered karma?
No. Okay. See, here's, we have to be able to accommodate that these words have multiple usages. Yeah, because otherwise if we're fixed that it can only be used one way, we'll always have a problem. Because the point is karma means activity.
Yes.
So the sinful person is doing karma. Mm-hmm. Right? The pious person, materialist, is doing karma. Mm-hmm. Right? The beginning stage of devotional service, one's doing karma. Right? The final stage of devotional service, one's doing karma. So in other words, activity is common throughout all of them.
Yes.
Right? But the difference is in the consciousness. Right? One will do anything to get what result. One is willing to restrict oneself and follow a higher, you know, social principles to get what he wants. Right? The other one is wants to do it connected to Krishna, but he still has material, you know, habits, practices. So he's trying to purify those. Right? And then eventually it comes to it's just only to please Krishna is activity performed. So you can say all of that is, but so for us means activity done to please Krishna. So that's karma yoga.
Okay.
Right? But within that, we're distinguishing the element of sakam and nishkam. Right? Because the point is, and we're also distinguishing that the field of karma, the activity, is going to be based on activities recommended in the Vedas. Activities recommended in the Vedas, if you're not connecting to Krishna, are called pious activities. So in other words, that means one is taking the recommended processes of connecting to Krishna. So there's a confusion on the pious activity or not, or connection to Krishna or not. You understand? So there's all this overlap of definitions here that are necessary. So the difficulty then devotees will say, well, we don't bother with the Vedics, so therefore they don't follow the recommendations of scripture, so therefore they try to engage activities that normally, you know, would be defined as sinful. You know, but not, let's say, grossly sinful. You know, it's just kind of like, you know, ho-hum, you know, not so disgusting sinful. You know what I'm saying? Be nice. But the point is if that niceness is not based on the Vedas, it's not actually sinful. It's not actually pious. And what we're talking about is not, maybe pious on artha or pious on kama. But even then, they don't know the connection to the scriptures. So how will they really know how to define it? You know, how will they know that they're doing the best? Right? And if they can't define it according to scripture, because scripture analyzes it, how will they actually know how to connect it to Krishna? If they're doing it, great. But if they're not doing it, what's their method to find out? You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. Is that activity you know, is defined by if it's recommended by scriptures or not. And then there's the point of you following that what says recommended in scripture, are you doing for Krishna or not? Right? So the point is performing activities recommended by the scripture for Krishna, that's the best. But the most important of that is doing it for Krishna. So even if you're doing an activity that's not necessarily defined in scripture, it's done for Krishna, then that's better than not doing it for Krishna. You understand? Does this make sense? Right? So that's the problem, is you have these overlapping. So depending on the situation, they're talking about a different aspect. Like that. So that's why it seems to be confusing. That's why it's discussed from so many different angles. So eventually, it will stop being confusing. Yeah? The Lord explains that one who works in devotion has pure consciousness, and his mind and senses are controlled. He is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. He works only for Krishna, and therefore he is never entangled. Srila Prabhupada writes in Message of Godhead, such spiritualized persons alone can actually show sympathy to the fallen in terms of the individual, the place, and the time. And in spite of performing apparently material activities, such spiritualized persons are free from the bondage of work. This process is explained in the 7th verse of the 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Quote, householders who perform their work with a view to transcendental results, out of sympathy for all others, are really eligible to become public leaders. All others who claim to be public leaders are mistaken. So, in other words, such a spiritualized person, only they are actually able to apply this compassion to the individual soul, you know, according to the time and place. Others, then they're going to stick to broadly defined material qualities. You know what I'm saying? Or devotional activities that they will apply in a very broad sense. So they won't make any distinction according to the individual or the circumstances. Right? It's just a general rule. You know, and then it's always, well, we have to set an example. You know, how many times have you heard that? And actually, has it ever worked? Right? You know, it means, you know, your extreme example. Did the, what do you call it, the Inquisition work? No. So that's the point, is all this, you know, extreme application of rules, not according to the individual and according to the time, place, and circumstance, but based on the authority of scriptures, it never establishes an example anyway. You know, the only example it establishes is people take up mundane consciousness and become insecure. Right? Because, why? Because their consciousness is lower, so they're unable to apply it in a spiritualized form, or a very advanced spiritualized form. So therefore, that aspect, this material, is going to give a problem. Yes? No? Yes, anytime I see some move towards the head. No question. Okay. I said, you know, I say best defense is offense. Right? Question. Others are afraid of questions. No. So, what's your question? No question. Okay. Okay, and at the same time they're engaged in apparently material activities, but there's no bondage. You know what I'm saying? So this becomes a problem. Why? Because we have this faith, and we were saying, in the materialistic qualities. Right. Let us take the 26 qualities of a devotee. Okay? Now we know that Swarup Lakshana is surrender to Krishna. Now all the other ones then could be exercised without surrender to Krishna. Right? But if that Swarup Lakshana is there, then there's that connection. But why are these other qualities the ones that we'll look at? What's the attractive feature that we would be inspired by these other 25 qualities?
Because we can tell.
We can tell. Okay, yeah. Means they're observable. Okay. So, but if we can tell what a position someone's in, what's the benefit?
We'll compare,
okay. And then having compared, then what will one do?
We can get inspired, maybe.
Get inspired? Yes, okay, inspired, but inspired in which way?
We can elevate ourselves.
Okay, we can elevate ourselves, and elevate ourselves in what way?
By adopting the same qualities.
By adopting the same qualities, okay. And then, what will we do with those? Having adopted those same qualities, elevated ourselves, then? Sorry? Yes, because you can also use these good qualities, because these good qualities will advance one wherever one are. Remember, we're saying in reflection, there's no difference. So the good qualities that you advance in spiritual life are the good qualities you'll advance in material life. You understand? So we're comfortable with them because we know them from the material. Because what is, let's say the person's humble. You know, take a simple one. What's the advantage if the other person's humble? You could exploit him if you wanted. Or, in the reverse, he will not exploit you. Right? You understand? So, all these qualities we look for, then we're looking for them on the material platform. Right? Because it's better for us. In other words, if everybody else is good and nice, the situation's better for yourself. You understand? So that's why many times we see is that when we're applying the devotional process, devotees will focus simply on those qualities. Why? Because then there's some benefit for themselves. Right? Not on the Sarup Lakshana is their commitment to Krishna. Right? So therefore someone can come into the room, into the conversation, start saying all kinds of things about they don't agree with things in Prabhupada's books, or start talking about other processes and this and that, and no one says much. As long as they say it in a nice way. Right? You understand? The consideration is not, are they committed to Srila Prabhupada and his mission, and committed to Krishna consciousness. As long as they're showing nice qualities, they might be, you know, very acceptable in this as association. You understand? So the whole point is that someone who is spiritually advanced, they're able to connect these properly. Now here comes the problem. Let us say you have a sannyasi; they have money. So according to what Prabhupada just is saying here. Is there a problem? No. There's not a problem. Because it says, in spite of performing apparently material activities, such spiritualized persons are free from the bondage of work. They go out, they collect. They have lots of money. Why do they have lots of money? Yeah, because then they'll use it in some preaching program. They'll collect $100,000 and use it on a preaching program. Okay? But now, if we're looking with this not spiritualized vision, how will we see this?
He's got all the privilege.
He's got the privilege. He's got the money. He can fly around, do whatever he wants. We're grahasas. We only get to go to India once every 2 years. You know, he goes 2-3 times a year. You know, this is nonsense. You know, we're the ones. So why, what do they see going to India as? As a vacation. So that means enjoyment. So Swami is enjoying so much, you know, and we poor grihasas who are, you know, meant to enjoy. It's our birthright to enjoy. We're not enjoying in these nonsense sannyasis. They're getting all the enjoyment. Right? Does that make sense? So this is where we're meaning it. So then what will be the thing? They'll get together and have a meeting. Oh, sannyasis shouldn't have money. If they don't have money, so the grihasthas are going to get to $100,000 together and have the preaching program? No. Let's say the sannyasi got the $100,000. Then he'll spend how much on this preaching? Basically most of it. There'll be a little tickets here and there, but when he goes here and there, what does he do? Preaches. Okay. And he may buy him a sweater, this or that, or a bag or something like that. You know, he has a fancy watch. Okay. How much is that as compared to $100,000? Not so much. Now, let's say the 100,000 was gathered by the grihastha. how much would go into that preaching program? 10%, you know. And this is on a good day, right? You know, he's in the class, so he's being Krishna conscious. 10%, you know. You know what I'm saying? I'm just joking. No, even 20%. But the point is it's going to go, it's going to disappear. So as far as service to Krishna that's direct, then the sannyasi having the money, it will be used nicely. But now the grihastha has money means he'll be able to indirectly engage so many things in Krishna's service, which is also important. So we're not saying it's not important. But the point is that it's not as important as direct. You know what I'm saying? But if one's absorbed and indirect, one needs to have the facility to do that. But one shouldn't mistake that they're the same. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Even though it looks very similar.
Another point, not considering the connection of the service to Krishna itself, but the individual of the sannyasi, is there any danger that when he starts to
can be, but there also could not be. Is there any danger in a grihastha having lots of money?
Yes.
So the point is the danger is the same. But the point is the situation is probably going to be a lot less, in one sense, a lot less dangerous. Who's to inspire the sannyasi to misuse the money? Right? Basically no one. Are the brahmacharis going to tell him? Hey, Maharaj, we could buy a Ferrari for this. You know? Now, can you imagine us, you know, going down high? Yeah. Swami's rule, yeah. You know, it's like that. Saffron, so, you know. You know what I'm saying? Are they like that? Or is there a good chance his wife's going to say, you have that much, you know, we're going around this car, why don't we get a better car? You know, he has a better car, you know, and we've been in this zone longer than him, why does he have the car? You know? Right? And then the kids, what do they want? Right? Yeah, you know, they're just happy. Oh, I would love a Bhagavatam set for my birthday. You know, is that what the kids are all asking for? You know, they want their Xbox, you know, they want this and that. They want a new computer, you know. You know, but he's got it. I mean, you just got it 6 months ago. That's the point, 6 months old. It's a dinosaur. You know, I can't take this to school. You know, like that, you know, so. Does that make sense? So that's the point. So we make the mistake is seeing it apparently material. Because it looks similar. Because as we said, the reflection always looks the same. But you have to see the consciousness. So that's the point. Conscious mind and senses controlled, dear to everyone, everyone's dear to him. But so then it works. One's not entangled. So there's a difference. Right? But at the same time as these areas of entanglement, one should be careful about. Right? Does that make sense? You know, you heard before, the days of the Raj, you know, one of the gurus heard that he had something like 90 cashmere sweaters. Okay, now why does he have 90 cashmere sweaters? If we analyze.
He's attached to buying them.
No, he didn't buy them.
Oh.
They were all given to them. So why would they be given? People like them. They want to do something. It's like, you know, you give in spiritual life, what do you give in return? Right? So they can give things. Right? So being in Europe and all that, and that's what's in, you know, so then they gave those. Now, that they gave that many, is that actually a problem? No. You know, keeping that many, that could be a problem. Right? Unless the guy really suffers from cold and has to wear 10 at a time or something. And then you have to wash them and it takes so many days, you know, like this. Remember Caesar? He was very much affected by cold. He used to wear 6 togas at a time. You know, in the winter in Rome. You know, this doesn't get that cold, but you know, he'd wear 6 togas. You can just imagine what he was wearing in Gaul, right? 3 bearskins. You know, so. But so the point is how much is actually usable, that should be kept. The other should have been given away. Right? So if he got 90 and he kept, you know, 3 or 4 or whatever he needed, or because he travels around so has a few in each place, and then the rest he gives away to, you know, how you say, deserving devotees, you know, whatever, by service done or like this and that, then it's not a problem. You understand? So this whole, but some will say, no, these things shouldn't go on. Things shouldn't be given. Because if you do, then you'll be corrupted. But the point is why would one look at that vision? Because it's apparently material. You understand? So these are very fine points. You know, we just walk by them and walk into meetings and we make decisions that are not supported by the Bhagavad Gita. You know, and we take Bhagavad Gita as the basis of our spiritual understanding. You know, and here we're in fifth chapter, right? We're not fifth chapter, right? Okay, we did finally get to fifth chapter. Okay. So it's fifth chapter. So we haven't even gotten to the end. But we're not even able to make these discriminations. So this is why this is important. Otherwise, why analyze like this, right? Does that make sense? We could just read it and go, any questions, speak on a couple of points, and move on. But this is what Shankya is for. Shankya is to analyze and break it down so that we actually understand what we're dealing with. Because if you don't know the field, how do you know what to do or what results you can get? So if you don't know that the field has all these elements and you can use them spiritually and materially, then you're left with what? Nothing. Then you're like the karma, the jnana yogi, the mayavadis, who do nothing. You understand? This is the point. It's very, very simple. Right? And as we mentioned, advancement is based on what?
Action.
And?
Connection.
Connection to Krishna. And?
Knowledge.
Faith. We discussed a little bit before. Your question? Association. So if there's a problem that someone's working on a high profile, you know, situation, then they should make sure he gets lots of association. Someone's doing so much, then they should be given association. Not that, oh, it may go wrong. That's a pessimist. Everything goes wrong. You know, I mean, you know, it's like then how you say, you know, then one's sitting in the wrong place. One should be in some, you know, little, how you say, cafe on the sidewalk in Paris, you know, discussing, you know, various philosophies of, you know, how you say, negative philosophies like that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Why not Srila Prabhupada give off his sweaters and socks to his disciples sometimes? He had many when he was going to other countries.
So, didn't we already say that?
I thought... No, you didn't mention Srila Prabhupada.
And why would I have to...
I was just
do that?
Making a point.
Oh, making a... No, but... A point, but what's the purpose of the point? Okay. So it means that we're saying what the other one could do and Prabhupada was doing it. Yeah? Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that there are three types of Nishkam Karma Yogis. Those who have controlled their intelligence, Vishuddhatma. Those who have controlled their minds, Vijitatma. And those who have controlled their senses, Jitendriya. Among them, those who control over their intelligence are in the best position. Right? Because if the intelligence is in control, then it can control the others, because the intelligence is in control of the mind and the senses. Right? If someone is in control of the mind, then the mind itself will take help from the intelligence, and it therefore will control the senses. Right? So if that's there, or if the senses are controlled to be able to do that, means you have to actually have, to some degree, the mind or the intelligence. Right? So, in other words, all three will have to be dealt with. It's just which is the prominence, which is the entrance point of control. Through intelligence, you're controlling, you know, all three. Through the mind, you're controlling all three. Or through the senses, you're controlling all three. Right? But of them, the best is the intelligence, because the intelligence, that the knowledge is always there. the sense you have control, but then if something happens, situation or something, one might lose control, because the mind also, it accepts and rejects, but if intelligence is there, it's fixed. Right? So, but the point is all three will be accomplished. You know, knowledge is there to control the mind and engage the senses properly. Srila Prabhupada translates sarva bhutatma bhutatma as compassion to all living entities. He does not refer to a person who has become one with all other persons, atmas, because this was already rejected by Krishna in verse 2.12. Moreover, if there was only one atma, the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna would have been meaningless, right? Atma speaking to atma, right? Like a movie. Atma. Atma talking to Atma. No? You understand? In other words, the Mayavadis will say Bhutatma, Bhutatma means that the Atma that's become one with the Atma. Like that. So in the note, in attempt to defend themselves against the last argument, I like that, in the attempt, right? They're going to fail, but they're going to attempt. The impersonalists bring in the theory of bodhita anuvritti. According to this theory, a jivan mukta, one beyond duality, can still teach others, although teaching implies duality. Right? How they come up with this, I don't know. You know, so this is, you know, special duality, right? What's it? Vishuddwait, right? Instead of Vishuddadwait. Vishuddwait. It's purified duality. Right? The Jivan Mukta somehow maintains a type of conditioned vision caused by remaining ignorance. This ignorance, however, does not interfere with his realization of Brahman. Oh, by remaining ignorance or remaining ignorant? Or by remaining ignorant? What do you mean? Okay. The Vaishnava commentators answer that even if such a theory was true, the teaching could still not take place. Sri Prabhupada Ramanujacharya writes in his commentary to verse 2.12, the perception of water in a mirage and such other perceptions are undoubtedly a persistent continuance of what has been sublated. Sublated?
Destroyed.
Oh, okay. Oh, it means like sublimated and so, okay, it's another form of the word. Okay. That means what has been, you know, controlled or what has been conquered. Like that. But they cannot be the causes of activities like fetching water from the mirage. Okay. So here also, the knowledge of distinctions, which has been sublated by the knowledge of non-dualism, cannot be the cause of instruction and other such other activities, though it may continue to persist, for there is the conviction that it is a subject of unreal nature. So in other words, you can't say that you're on the transcendental platform, but the Mayavadis, you know, on the Brahman platform, everything is one. At the same time, as you can still preach within the realm of duality. Because the point is that if you see everything as one, there is no duality, so how would you preach? That's why you say it's not possible. Even if you accepted such a theory, it's not possible to apply. Because to apply it, you have to see duality. You know? So the person, he sees water in a mirage. You know? So that can be an impetus to understand that there is no mirage. There is no water. But to say that, well, I can go there and take up a bucket of water, you know, that's not going to work, right? So one can't function within the material environment using duality at the same time to claim that one is non-dual, right? Yes.
This what Prabhupada means by word juggler?
Yes, this is word juggler. They just take it. It sounds good. So devotees use it also many times. The word juggler. It's just a matter of how you present the words, it sounds great. But in reality, it can't be applied. They try to apply it. Of course, the Mayavadis try to apply it, but they don't get the results. So the same way as any kind of word, one tries to apply it. You know, like political correctness is word jugglery. You apply it, but it doesn't work. Right? It doesn't create social, you know, continuity and peace and satisfaction, because it's just juggling of words. You simply picked a word that sounds better, and so people don't mind what you say. Right? But it's not a matter of diplomacy, in that there's this particular mood that's appropriate for an activity, so you use words within that. Right? It's not that, because diplomacy is the normal, is etiquette. Right? But this is actually, you're trying to accomplish something through the use of those words, rather than to create the environment. You know, so in other words, the political correct, it's the usage of the words that gets things done. But that itself is not an activity, so all that's gotten done was your acceptance of it. More than that, it can't be applied. But the other is diplomacy means you're establishing an environment in which activity will be performed and result will be great. You see the difference? Right? You know, so in other words, it sounds great, but it actually can't be used. You know, so this is word juggling. They take the words and, you know, they try to, in a philosophical way, use, you know, what is used in a joking way is chala. You know, it's just you change the context of it and make a joke out of it. So they use it as an actual philosophy. You know? So that doesn't mean that one doesn't expertly use words as the right synonym for the situation. You know, that's why vocabulary is there. You know, language is there that has the variety, because as the situation changes, then the definitions will also adjust. So that means your wording will adjust. But it's not for a purpose other than enhancing that situation that's based on scriptures for the purpose of Krishna consciousness. Yeah, but this is how they juggle the words. Because it's just like I say, you know, it's just like the soul is Brahman, and then the supreme Brahman, so there's no difference, so the soul merges into the supreme Brahman and becomes one. And they give example, just like a green parrot then, you know, goes into a green tree. Right? So it sounds great. Oh yeah, you know, the green parrot in the green tree, and yeah, it's all one, but at the same time is then there is a parrot in a tree. So there's still two. You know, so like that, it sounds good. That's the word juggling. Is they simply adjust how they explain the words and all that, just so that they get their purpose done, that you understand. But you can't apply their philosophy. It doesn't work. So that's the problem. Yes,
Lord, is it that Mayavadis don't use their intelligence, they're more emotional?
No, they use a lot of intelligence. But the problem is that intelligence is misdirected. They shy away from emotion, but of course, there's ultimately the emotion that they're God. You know, like that need. But they generally steer away from emotion and stuff. So that's why it's very hard with them. If you want to use examples, you can't use personal examples. You have to use these, you know, things like that, birds and trees, rivers into oceans, you know, these kind of things. You can't really use people and stuff. Sometimes, but you have to be very careful. Because they don't understand emotions and relations. Is that so? Yes.
In our philosophy, we have something which sounds apparently similar, that to preach you need to discriminate to be Manyama. And if we have even this Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya. And how do we explain this nicely so that it's not, doesn't sound contradictory?
What's contradictory?
Because of this explanation that actually the self-realized soul going being realized and then going to the platform of duality, it's kind of...
But is it duality?
It's not, obviously.
Yeah, well the thing is the difference is here is variety in the Mayavadi philosophy is illusion. There is no variety. It's all just one. There is, all this stuff is not here. It's not, this is not here. Right? But if you understand actual Brahman, this is here. It's just a variety of Brahman. So the point is, everything's Brahman doesn't mean that there's not variety. It's just Brahman. That's the essential element that you look at. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you have so many cars, but what you're looking at is just, it's a car. You can get it and drive. But they're all cars. So you're not distinguishing that, you know, this car is better than that car. It's just, you know what I'm saying? This is a truck. Okay, you can put more things in it, you know. They're saying this is only a two-seater, so only two people can go in it. You know, you have 50 people, you use a bus. You know what I'm saying? But they're all vehicles that transport you from one place to another. So that's the common point. So the common point is Brahman. There's variety in Brahman, but it's all Brahman. Right? But they say there is no variety. So that's why, so the point is how does the devotee want to make the distinction on Brahman? Right? In other words, is he simply seeing everyone as a pure spirit soul as servant of Krishna? And so functioning just on that platform. So therefore there's no need of interacting on any other platform. Right? Because you're seeing the spirit soul. Or are you identifying the conditioned nature of the spirit soul? And therefore you are working with that aspect of Brahman. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the point is the Madhyama makes those distinctions. So the Paramahamsa may come to that platform to make the distinctions to preach. Otherwise, in his mind, everyone's a pure spirit soul. That's what he's seeing. So the conditioned nature is a covering. So you don't actually need to deal with the covering. Right? But the Madhyama means they deal with the covering. That's your access to the soul, because the soul thinks they are the covering. Therefore, if you want to access them, you have to do it through the covering. Does that make sense? So it's not a matter of it's unreal, because it's real. It's just the unreal is that they don't see its connection to Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, but for the Mayavadis, there is no such real means there is no variety. So for them to be on the Brahman platform and see no distinction, to the same time as work with distinction. To work with a distinction means they have to be an illusion to do it. Right? So how does that, how can you be an illusion and be self-realized at the same time? But for the Vaishnavas, it's a matter of illusion is simply not seeing its connection to Krishna. So if you see the connection to Krishna, there is no illusion. So that means you can deal with or not deal with as is necessary. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the difference. That's why their theory can't work. Right? Therefore, one who has achieved the vision of non-dualism cannot engage in the activity of teaching, which requires a wholehearted belief in dualism. But how do you teach? Because then you say, I'm the teacher, you're the student. Here are the books, here is knowledge, we're using words. So there's all this variety of things that you say are illusion. So technically speaking, in the pure sense, Mayavadis, any kind of impersonalist, should never teach. Because just teaching itself is illusion. Why would there be a need to teach? If it's all Brahman, why teach? You understand? So it's illusory that they should. And if they would take this up, that would be great. Because then they would stop causing so much trouble. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, but they're in illusion because of their funny philosophy here. Like that. What did you call it? Theory of Badita Anuvriti. Okay. Verses 8 to 9. Action in Krishna consciousness is real liberation. Transcendental loving service to Krishna is beyond the ordinary work governed by the five immediate and remote causes. The doer, the work, the situation, the endeavor, and fortune. Right? So, okay. Okay, so here, the doer means the living entity. Right? The work means what work needs to be done. But that's not the work, it's, you know, then there's the situation. Right, the work will be in a situation, so you have to consider that, because the situation will adjust your work. Right? Then the endeavor that you actually do, what's there. So you see the first three are your sambandha. Then the endeavor is abhideya, then fortune is prayojana. But now why does he use the word fortune? By fortune. Sanction of the Lord, right? Means.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't say that you can claim the results.
Yeah, that's also there. You can claim the result. Same time, if you work, you could, in one sense, claim. But the point is, do you want to claim?
No.
Because the point is, if you don't claim, and it's for Krishna, that's a higher person. If you do the work and don't claim and just leave it, then that would be called stupid, right? It means if you don't need the, won't do anything with the result, why endeavor for it? You know, the point is you do it for pleasing. You know, it's like you make this huge mandala. You take months and months to make, and then once it's made, then you pick up the corners and then merge it all together. You know, that's stupid. Okay, it's detachment, yes, and it took a lot of good qualities to be able to do that, work for months and all that. Of course, when they do those big ones, you generally see the press there and everyone's taking pictures and all that. So it is, they did get some recognition. But in any case, they did. So, but that would be foolish. It's a waste. The point is if you aren't going to do anything with the result, why work for it? So you work, you get the result, something should be done with it. But the point is then it's given to Krishna or it's already Krishna's. Right? Then that's the point. But still, as he mentioned, is that how the result will come, that's up to Krishna. So that's why the term fortune is used. You know, because if it's your fortune, you get it. If it's not your fortune, you don't get it. Because even though you make the endeavor, it means the doer, the work, the situation, the endeavor, and fortune. Okay, so there's the work is there, right? You make the endeavor, right? There's the situation that you can see, right? But what about the situation you can't see? What about the situation in last life or in some life you did something that for so many lifetimes you won't get that particular result? So no matter what endeavor you make, you won't get anything now. But the point is, if it's your duty, if you don't make the endeavor, you won't get anything in the future. Yeah, understand? So therefore, it's fortune, because it's dependent upon the Lord. So, like that. You know, all of it is dependent upon the Lord. And so the living entity thinks he's the doer, simply because he has the desire, but it's actually carried out by the modes of nature, with the Lord's sanction. So ultimately, the material energy, it's the material cause, you know, is doing it, and then the Lord is the ultimate cause. Like that. So then that everybody gets included.
I hear the words immediate and remote causes are used. So is fortune the remote cause and the others are immediate?
Immediate is, yeah, but at the same time, remote is also as the Lord is in the background.
Right.
Like that. So he's in the background of all of them. Why is the work the right work? Where did that come from? Which cause?
Krishna.
Krishna, but in which form of the four causes? Why is that work the work to get that result? Right? If we're taking the result as Krishna, it's the formal cause. Right? In other words, it's Krishna as the goal that you're trying to get, or that fortune. Then there are the forms and the situations in which that could be gained. Right? So that's the formal cause. That's what his internal potency takes. Now, because we're an illusion, then we look at all this, and so then it appears to us as external energy. Right? So therefore, then we're dealing with material cause, not the formal cause. Right? So if you see a connection to Krishna, you're dealing with the formal cause. Though, material energy is going to give you the result, because that's the form you're dealing with. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, immediate and remote. So the doer is the soul, but ultimately the doer is these other three causes, right? The work, the situation, the endeavor, those are all defined by the formal cause, right? And then the fortune, then that's Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So, but at the same time, there will be in a result that's observable. So that's also through the material cause and the formal cause. So all of them are there at once, but it's just what's the basis of them. So you have the immediate and remote. Is that okay? Okay, so we'll stop. Stop again. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Mitai Gaura Premananda.